From Beyond the Beltway, this is Bruce Dumont with our weekly analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Republican attorney Josh Cantrill, economist Mike Miller from Western Washington University, Bill Schneider, a senior fellow at Third Wave and a professor at George Mason University, and in our second hour, Phil Wegman, who is the White House reporter for Real Clear Politics. And in that second hour, we will be talking about the battle for the control of the United States Senate. Our phone lines open, 1-800-723-8289. Obviously, this is the last show we will be doing between now and Election Day, although a lot of people have already voted in this country. For those people who have been along the ride for the last, it seems like almost 2.5 years we've been talking about this election, I'd be interested in your calls and analysis tonight as to who you're for and why and how the campaign has gone. Again, 1-800-723-8289. Bill Schneider, I want to begin with you because you have described Donald Trump as a cultural warrior. And what we may be watching here is more than just a political story, but a cultural story. What did you mean by that?
I meant that the party of Ronald Reagan is dead. The party of Ronald Reagan was basically a business-oriented party. It was establishment conservative, and it had establishment values. The party that has taken over the Republicans is the MAGA party, led by Donald Trump. Donald Trump's the leader, really, of a personality cult. His followers really revere him. Not much else in the Republican tradition, especially business and traditional conservatism. He's a populist conservative. He's an isolationist. He's a protectionist. He wants to replace the income tax with tariffs. He does all kinds of things that traditional Republicans would never do.
Josh Cantor, I want to go to you. For those who are regular listeners, you've been on this program for almost 20 years now. You were a Nikki Haley supporter early in this campaign. I would say that you were reluctant but very aggressive in your support of Donald Trump when he was president. Where do you stand now, and do you view that you were part of a cult?
No, I don't, and I think that it's unfair to say that it's a cult of personality and that the party is a cult. Certainly, there is the hardcore MAGA element to the party, but that's really probably only about 25 to 30% of it. The fact is that unlike the Democrats, the Republicans had a primary process, and Donald Trump emerged from that process the winner. Yes, I was a Nikki Haley supporter, and I would have preferred even Ron DeSantis over Trump. But at this point, he brought the various factions of the party together, and he is the nominee. And in 2 days, America's going to go decide. And part of what they're going to have to look at is, you know, he actually served 4 years as president. And that term delivered what I would argue to be a time of peace and prosperity for this country. And the question is whether the country and the voters in the middle want to go back to that, or they want to continue with the open borders and inflation and the foreign policy chaos that has accompanied the Harris-Biden administration.
Mike Miller, we should mention for those who have not watched you regularly for the last 20 years, you were not a Donald Trump fan first time around. You reluctantly became a fan during his presidency. You said a couple of months ago on this program you would support him now. But talk about him. Do you consider yourself a cult, or how would you describe the overall depiction of Donald Trump in our body politic?
No, I don't. I'm like Josh. I'm not part of a cult. I don't see him as a cult member. I see him as anti-establishment, and I just think there are a lot of Americans who wish to go back to. I guess it's populist to be pro-American. I guess it's populist to be somewhat isolationist, but you know he wants to do it by projecting strength. I don't particularly like the man himself. I he's a very flawed individual, and I would have preferred Ron DeSantis be the candidate. But I have to admit with Trump his policies on the whole are ones that I can endorse, with the exception of how far he wants to go with tariffs. I just think he will set a much better tone with regard to economic growth as opposed to economic redistribution. American, that we will not necessarily go to war. We will try to negotiate, which of course I always thought was the position of the Democrats, to try to negotiate for peace. He wants to do things which I think are anti-establishment, and I rather, like that.
Well, he clearly is anti-establishment. I mean, the things that he has done just, you know, recently showing up dressed as a garbage man following the president's comment about his fans being, supporters being garbage. He certainly showed up as the man of the people, you know, when he was serving French fries out of McDonald's. You know, he does all kinds of things that, you know, the bros or the Animal House Republicans seem to think is cute, which is, it's pop culture stuff. Bill, is that, am I overreacting to the pop culture aspect of the guy? The guy is a brilliant marketer. He knows what to do with an idea.
Yes, he does. And I would say that he's replaced the party of Ronald Reagan with the party of Archie Bunker. The party that he leads is a party that really idealizes Bunker, working class, conservative, populist values, not at all the party that the Republicans used to be. I was with a group of Republican contributors last night. They all said that they could not support Donald Trump because he was too offensive to them and to their values. They were pretty much upper class WASP types. But when I said the party of Archie Bunker, they clapped, they cheered. They're the people who give the money.
Josh, what do you think about when you hear him do some of these stunts that he's been involved in, some a little more egregious than others, and some, I think, frankly, kind of brilliant? I thought the McDonald's thing turned out to be a brilliant move on his part.
I think the McDonald's was brilliant because it highlighted him as a champion of the working class, and contrasted with Kamala's claim that she worked at McDonald's, which they don't have any record of. And as far as the garbage stunt, I mean, look, I was not a fan of the Madison Square Garden rally. I wish he wouldn't have done it. And I certainly wish that they had vetted that comic. He never would have made it to the stage. But Trump took a bad situation, and he was handed a bit of a gift by our gaffe-prone president, Biden, and turned it into gold. I just thought that the way that he handled that was absolutely brilliant. Showing up in a garbage outfit.
How about when he makes comments about the size of Arnold Palmer's penis? I mean,
I'll let Josh talk about that.
No, I want to ask you for that. I mean, that will be a memorable moment of this campaign. You know, George Bush, first or second, would have never done that. Ronald Reagan would have never done that. But he does. And he dominates. He dominates the news for saying it. When we come back, I want to get everybody's quick reaction to that. We're not going to delve into it, but I want to get everybody's quick reaction to it. And again, if you feel that you were a member of a cult supporting Donald Trump, I want to hear from you as well. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont from Chicago.
Hello. You know, these days, I'm often quoted as saying, you can't believe everything you read on the internet. People forget that I was the first technology president, using the telegraph, T-mails as I like to call them, to communicate with my generals. Well, today, we are fighting a cybersecurity war, and our best defense is for folks to follow some of these tips when they're online. If it seems too good to be true, it probably is. Hover your cursor over links to determine the true web address. Look for misspellings and poor grammar, which are warning signs of fraud. Be suspicious of emails requesting urgent action, and never give away sensitive personal information. With malware for none, with cyber protection for all, this is your humble servant, Abraham Lincoln.
The central and midwestern U.S. averages more than 850 tornadoes each year. And lately, the number of floods has been rising in the region, too. So chances are, there will be more twisters and floods near here again. And between school, sports, and social lives, chances are, you won't be with your kids when it happens. Will they know what to do? Ready.gov/kids has all the educational tools and information to make the conversation easy. When the time comes, chances are, they'll feel prepared, not scared. So talk with your family today.
Russo went back. A question. One last question. We're not going to talk a lot of time on it. But his comments about Arnold Palmer, is that what intrigues him to the young bros? Is he spending too much time worrying about the young bros with his comments, Bill?
Yep, he is. That was a very crude and crass comment. It offended a lot of voters. His support was very strong among white working class voters. They used to be Democrats. They're now solidly Republican.
It seems to me, Josh Cantrow, that he has spent little time, if any, trying to reach out to Nikki Haley, her supporters, and you know, people that showed up. I mean, 20% of them voted against him in a Republican primary when he had already, you know, dropped out of the race. So there's a good chunk of Republican voters who just don't like him, and I don't think you spend a moment trying to think about him.
There are a lot of Democratic voters who do like him.
Josh, what do you think about that?
I think that he's made a huge strategic error in not reaching out to Nikki Haley. Instead of doing and her supporters, Harris has, now she hasn't offered any policy prescriptions or anything to offer them in terms of policy at all. She's a blank slate on that, or an empty slate. But when it comes to at least reaching out to them, she's doing that. I don't know why Trump wouldn't have, if you're going to have this big Republican love fest at the Madison Square Garden, why not have Nikki Haley there too? Why not have Nikki Haley campaigning with you in some of the suburbs of Philadelphia and Atlanta and Milwaukee and Detroit and places like that? I don't get it at all. And it's very frustrating to me.
Maybe she doesn't want to do it. I mean, we're just assuming that Trump
She wants to do it. I was on a Zoom with her and a bunch of other people, 2 weeks ago. She has reached out to the campaign. She has opened up her schedule. She wants to do it. She doesn't expect anything in return. She knows she won't be a part of the administration. She wants to win. She wants to defeat this woke progressivism and put a nail in the coffin of all of this DEI craziness. And, you know, this administration, Harris does not deserve to be president, and Nikki Haley feels very strongly about that.
Mike, in your go ahead, Bill.
There's one other voice we haven't heard from. We haven't heard from Nikki Haley recently, but we haven't heard from the one living Republican ex-president, George W. Bush. Why doesn't he say something? Some people who work for him are urging him to say something. He hasn't said a word. He has a constituency. He knows what the office is all about. He hasn't endorsed anybody in this election. Where is George W. Bush?
Would that make any difference?
I would assume that the reason he hasn't spoken is because he doesn't like Mr. Trump, and maybe he's going by the Reagan idea, you never speak ill of another Republican. And I give him credit for that. But we got to remember, there's one thing that in terms of Nikki Haley's, where else do they have to go? I know that there's no doubt that Donald Trump is not Ronald Reagan. But my goodness, look at the difference between the Democratic Party under, say, Bill Clinton, where illegal immigration was something that absolutely had to be stopped, and abortion was not something you did right up to the moment of birth. The Democrats.
We froze up on Mike.
Thinking that they're not the party that they were even 10 or 15 years ago. And you know, the other thing, I almost wanted to give Harris a chance. I thought maybe, you know, because I'm not a giant, Trump supporter, though I voted for him already. She is, I looked up what would be the best word to describe her. And the best word I could come up with is vacuous. She's empty. There's just nothing there. She has no ability to explain what she wants to do because I don't believe that there's anything there. And I think
Here's a question I want everybody to respond to. Several months ago, I think it's got to be maybe 2.5 months ago now, I reached out because I felt, I mean, as a journalist and observer of American politics, and this was, you know, when Joe Biden was running for re-election, I thought it was really sort of, it wasn't journalistically pure that the image that Kamala Harris had was necessarily accurate. I mean, she cackled. I mean, she was the butt of every joke. No one took her seriously. They never asked her a question about policy, once in a while about immigration, but that was it. So I had an African-American journalist on the program with me, and we talked about it. And because I said, do you think she's been treated fairly? And this was, again, long before she became the candidate. And she said, no, I don't think she's been dismissed as sort of an idiot. And the national news media has helped perpetuate this image. So my question to you, Bill, not asking you to speak for the entire media, but I mean, if we turn back the clock 2 months ago, the image of Kamala Harris would be of a cackler, someone that was not very bright. And in reality, was that an accurate portrayal of who she was, so that when she became a candidate for president, she had to overcome a lot of things that the news media and the Republicans had created for her, an image of, for herself?
She wasn't widely known. She's still not very widely known. People don't know what she really stands for. She seems to be a traditional progressive Democrat, although she's been moving away from that image. I don't think people knew a great deal about her. But that's not the point in this election. This election is not about Kamala Harris. It's not about Joe Biden either. It's about Donald Trump. Basically, what shapes this election is how you feel about Donald Trump. Should he be president again? Those people who support him are voting for him. Those people who don't support him are voting for Kamala Harris. They don't much care what she stands for.
Well, I think that's sadly true, what Bill just said. But it ought to be a referendum, I would think, on the Biden-Harris administration and their policies.
It is in part.
But it isn't.
That's one reason why it's so close.
I understand Bill's point. My only question is, if I listen to the press and look at the way they talk about her, she is adored. She is everything that you called her, Bruce. She's the opposite of that. She is bright.
Now,
she's articulate. Now. That's right. And I understand. She's vacuous. So I think this is between Harris and Trump. I don't think that Trump is the only piece of this, this situation. I think that even some people who maybe don't like Mr. Trump, when they saw the alternative with somebody as empty as she is, they would turn back to Trump and vote for him. That's why I'm wondering, in spite of everything I hear about how close the polls are, and of course, my record at forecasting outcomes of politics is not very good. I still think he's going to win over 300 electoral votes, and it will be over by noon Wednesday. And I think it's because she is such a horrible candidate, just like Hillary Clinton was when she ran against Donald Trump 8 years ago.
All right. I was going to do this later in the interview, but let's take the time now. Bill Schneider, let me turn to you. Look into your crystal ball. You've looked into it for about 10 to 12 presidential campaigns in the past. Where do you see this race right at this moment?
Very, very close. It's one of the closest in American history. Do you know what the closest election was in American history? 1960. John Kennedy won that election by 0.2 percentage points. It was very close, and Nixon chose not to challenge what happened in Illinois because he thought it'd be too disruptive to the country. So he let Kennedy go ahead and take the election. That was the closest. This is rivaling that as a very close election. Why is it so close? People aren't happy with the Biden administration. They want change. Every election is a referendum on the current administration, and that referendum is very negative. On the other hand, they don't like Donald Trump. So it's a choice between how much do they want change, and how much do they dislike or like Donald Trump? That's why it's so close.
All right, Bill, it's close. You talk to Republicans and Democrat operatives from both sides of the aisle. You have for over 50 years. I want to come back to my basic question. Where does your gut tonight come down on this race? Who do you think, again, there's no prize, there's no cookie to win other than bragging rights. But again, you'd have to share those bragging rights with lots of people. If we put a gun to your head, which we don't want to do, and we don't want to do it to Liz Cheney either, who comes out? Who's got momentum? Who's got momentum now?
I don't know. That's all I can tell you. I don't know, and I don't think anyone knows. I've read all kinds of opinions. I don't think anyone knows.
I don't think anybody knows right, either, but Josh, I want to ask you.
So, Bruce, I'll answer your question. I think there's slight momentum with Trump right now. My view is I'm not as optimistic as Mike. I do think Trump will win, but I think it's going to be interesting because I'm predicting that he loses North Carolina, but I still think he's going to win. There's a lot of things going on in North Carolina that are not working in his favor.
Okay.
Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, and then Nevada is going to put him over the top, and it will be 261 to 267 Trump victory.
Okay, he's going with the numbers. That close. When we come back, I'll offer my thoughts, and we'll take your calls at 1-800-723-8289. Last opportunity to talk about campaign 2024 tonight. Thanks. Certainly.
Is precise, no margin for error.
Dare to forget that. Dare to have fun with it. Get weird with it. Dare to send those old STEM theories flying past the neighbor's house into outer space. Dare to program something internet breaking, record breaking. Dare to blow their minds. Dare to learn the difference between sedimentary and metamorphic rock. Go find those rocks. Dare to keep daring. Dare to STEM. Check out She Can STEM to get started.
STEM is precise, no margin for error.
Dare to forget that. Dare to have fun with it. Get weird with it. Dare to send those old STEM theories flying past the neighbor's house into outer space. Dare to program something internet breaking, record breaking. Dare to blow their minds. Dare to learn the difference between sedimentary and metamorphic rock. Go find those rocks. Dare to keep daring. Dare to STEM. Check out She Can STEM to get started.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Nice to have you with us. A little background before I give my my prediction or where more my body comes at the moment, my political sense. A little history. Back in 2012, early in that campaign for president, having done this program for many years and talking with people from all over the country, I said months in advance of Election Day, I predicted that Donald Trump would be elected. And every liberal Democrat that I said that to literally laughed in my face. We played it back for them, you know, when the results came in. But there were very few, if any, national political figures who gave Donald Trump a chance. Not that I put myself in that category, but I do talk to people, you know, for 44 years every Sunday night. And I said that Donald Trump, I thought, would be elected. This was in 2016. Yeah. And I turned out to be right. And then it was just a sense of people that I talk with, people that call this program, guests that are on this program. And come 2020, I didn't have that feeling. There was no, I didn't have any sense in my body that that it was different. So I didn't call a winner in 2020. And where I am tonight, I was reviewing some old things the other day. And early in this campaign, I wrote an essay, which I think I sent to Real Clear Politics, in which I said that Donald Trump could win the Republican primary, but there was no way that he could win the election. And I went through the 9 battleground states that I determined, you know, this is in January of this year. I went through their leadership, and basically it was a combination of it's 4 years later for Donald Trump. The political climate in each of the states has changed. The political machinery in each of the states has changed. And states that used to have Republican governors now have Democratic governors. And they went through all, basically, 9 of the states. And I came to the conclusion, and I said it, and I read it on the air, that Donald Trump could win the nomination, but could not win the election. Having gone through the ups and downs of a miraculous campaign by a truly miraculous marketer of himself, I've ridden the roller coaster up and down with Donald Trump. And we've had guests from all sides on Donald Trump. And I would say that on this note, you know, on the Sunday night before the election, my feeling is different than it was in 2016. I think that Kamala Harris is going to be elected. I think she has turned the tide. She has momentum at her back. Her television commercials, I think, are far superior to Donald Trump's. And there are issues that Donald Trump will be a big winner on. But I think his rhetoric and his mouth and his language and his decorum, have reached a level that I'm not so sure that longtime Republicans or Nikki Haley Republicans will hold their nose and vote for Donald Trump. They may have done it before. I just don't think they're going to do it. He spent way too much time, you know, fanning the base. And, you know, call me right, call me wrong. You can call next week and tell me whether I'm right or wrong. But right now, I think on Tuesday or this coming week, I think Kamala Harris is going to be elected the president-elect of the United States.
Bruce, could I dialogue with you for a moment?
I'm sorry?
Bruce, I had a question for you.
Yes.
Right now, I hear you, and I think it's going to be close. And I want to clarify because some readers or some listeners texted me, and they were confused by my answer. My answer is, prediction 271 to 267 electoral college victory for Trump, and that Harris carries the popular vote pretty easily. But right now, the polling aggregator sites, whether it's Real Clear Politics, whether it's 538, New York Times, or whether it's Nate Silver, all have Trump ahead, and he's way ahead of his polling from 4 and 8 years ago. I was just wondering what your thoughts are about that.
Well, I factor that into my decision. I mean, some polls are going to be right. Some polls are going to be wrong. Polls are not always right, as you know. And I'm going through, you know, I mean, I thought the McDonald's stunt was brilliant. I thought the garbage stunt was pretty brilliant. I mean, I think that the President Biden makes mistakes that hurt Kamala Harris. But I think, and this is where people are literally going to drive off the road, or they're going to say, I'm never going to listen to Beyond the Beltway again. Even though I have some reservations, I think in television commercials where she is controlling the message, I think she comes across friendly. She doesn't come across with a scowl. She comes across friendly. And you may not like her politics, but I think she's a tough person to hate. Hillary Clinton was easy to hate. I don't think Kamala Harris is easy to hate. Mike Miller?
Oh. Well, yeah, Bruce, I can't speak to the commercials for two reasons. One, I'm in Washington State, and it's clearly going to be King County, Seattle, will dominate, so my vote means nothing. And I can say I have literally seen not a single commercial. I don't watch television. The amount that I watch and I zap things, I have not seen a commercial, so I can't speak to that. I can only speak, and one reason I think is my gut, for the lack of something else. I'm not convinced that the pollsters are getting this right. They have gotten him wrong so many times before, in my mind. And I just, again, I'm glad that you think she's likable. I guess maybe she is. I just find her, again, empty. There's just nothing there. I don't think she's likable at all.
Michael, if I said likable, maybe that was a mistake. I don't find her likable. I just don't find her as, I don't find her as a villainous. She's not easy.
Oh, no. I agree.
Hate by Hillary Clinton. There's all kinds of built-in things.
Yeah.
So but she's, you know, I don't know. That's my thought. And I'm sure that we'll get calls 1-800-723-8029 if anybody would like to call and start the chatter about my future. But go ahead, you can do that.
Bruce, I'd like to just challenge you a bit and say, if you look at where Donald Trump was comparatively to 4 and 8 years ago, he is leading these three aggregate polling sites right now. And comparatively to Biden, he was down 7.4 points on the same day 4 years ago. And he was down 1.6 points to Hillary. He beat Hillary despite being down on all these sites, and he almost beat Biden. The election swung on 43,000 votes in three states. So to me, that's where I'm looking at it. The pollsters would have to be really wrong in the direction of Kamala, because right now they're showing a Trump victory.
Well, okay. You are correct that look, in 2016, Hillary Clinton carried the popular vote, 48 to 46. Trump got 46%, she got 48%. The reason he was elected was he carried the Electoral College. That's the way he did it, and he didn't do it in 2020. But the Electoral College was the key to his victory. She carried the popular vote, and the polls indicated that she would. And she did, and so what? The Electoral College is the only thing that matters.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, the polling gurus were projecting that Trump had like a 20% chance of winning. And, you know, and then that was against Hillary. And with Biden, it was going to be an absolute blowout. And it turned out from an Electoral College standpoint that Trump almost pulled it off again. So that's, to the extent that viewers are interested in my thinking, that's where I am on it. But I'm not all that good at prognosticating either. I did not, unlike you, Bruce, I did not think he would win in 2016. And I thought in 2020 that it was going to be the blowout that the pollsters were predicting.
Well, any goodwill that I earned in the journalistic world for my brilliant prediction in 2016 will be besmirched if he wins again, given my support for Kamala Harris. By the way, it's support because I think she's going to win. It isn't support because I want her to win. It isn't support because I'm going to vote for her. It's purely in a journalistic sense. My gut tells me one thing, and so I went with my gut tonight, and if we have callers on the line, 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8029. We're talking with Josh Cantrow, Bill Schneider, and Mike Miller, And again, we want to, in the second hour tonight, we're going to be talking about the battle for the U.S. Senate and Phil Wegman, who is the White House reporter for Real Clear Politics. And we'll go through the 9 key races that he thinks will control the U.S. And Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
No margin for error.
Dare to forget that. Dare to have fun with it. Get weird with it. Dare to send those old STEM theories flying past the neighbor's house into outer space. Dare to program something internet breaking, record breaking. Dare to blow their minds. Dare to learn the difference between sedimentary and metamorphic rock. Go find those rocks. Dare to keep daring. Dare to STEM. Check out She Can STEM to get started. With instant acceleration, electric cars are more fun to drive and more affordable than ever. Electric cars are here. Plug in to the present.
Shumat back on Beyond the Beltway. Yeah, let's go to Allendale, Florida, where Steve is listening to us tonight. Steve, go ahead.
First of all, I've been a listener for probably about 15, 20 years and really enjoy the show. So thank you very much. I have a question for Mr. Miller. I have practiced in the tax field for a little over 40 years, and I appreciate his approach with economics. And I'm just trying to find out, I've dug and dug and dug, and I cannot find out why the Biden and Harris administrations have proposed not increasing taxes on anyone that makes less than $400,000. Where did this number come from, and why hasn't it been adjusted for inflation? Because from the beginning of Biden, when he first proposed it until now, if you adjust for inflation, it should be $477,000.
Exactly right. That money, that those numbers are just made up. Yes. And even $400,000 puts you what? Being as a tax accountant, you would know that probably puts you in the top 2-3% of wage earners, maybe 5%. And so the thing is that both candidates don't realize is if you want to raise more revenue, you cannot do it by taxing the rich further. Because the rich are already paying almost, the top 1% pays almost one half of all income taxes already. The only way that countries like the Scandinavian countries and so forth that have much larger welfare states, people throughout different income ranges spend, are taxed a lot more. They pay a lot more in taxes. But those numbers that you hear, like the 400,000, those are just made up. They're pulled out of thin air, and they're trying to figure out who it is we're going to try to persuade by saying what we're going to say. And I'm not impressed at all. What do you think as a tax accountant? What would be the world you would go through if you had to somehow help a client deal with unrealized capital gains and declare those?
Oh my
God! Somebody who's worth many millions of dollars.
That would be a nightmare.
It would be a nightmare. And think also of the idea of you're going to somehow stop a firm from doing something called price gouging, you know, like food, where the profit margin for grocery stores is like 2.5%. How do you say, well, you're not allowed to make 2.5%. You have to make no percent. I just think that some of her very strange. I don't know. So in your practice, you would see a lot of people, right? Do they react? Are you in Florida, correct?
Correct.
Is he still there? Yeah. Now, have a lot of clients who used to live up in much higher taxed states like New York and New Jersey and so forth that come down there to avoid higher taxes?
Absolutely. It's absolutely a big thing, yes.
See, that's what I don't think that Harris realizes, that people with money also can move. They vote with their feet, and they can move outside the country if they become, if all of a sudden you have to pay a wealth tax Elizabeth
Bill
Warren would
Bill Schneider put through the Senate. Bill Schneider looks like he wants to make a comment. Bill, go ahead.
Well, if you look at Donald Trump's policies on taxes and federal government revenue, he wants to replace the whole income tax system with tariffs. He loves the word tariff. He says it's the most beautiful word in the dictionary. He would like to raise tariffs on everything. You know what would happen if he did that? Prices would skyrocket, not just on imported goods, but even on domestically produced goods, because they'd be able to raise the prices to match foreign prices. And every economist that I've ever heard of, that I've seen, that I've read, says that this is a terrible idea. It would be a formula for even higher inflation. He wants to raise tariffs on everything. A tariff is a national sales tax, and would fall disproportionately on poor people who spend more of their income on goods.
Josh,
I tend to agree with Bill about I'm not a big fan of tariffs. I think all three panelists, we agree on that. But getting back to Kamala's proposals, I mean, why would someone who's, from what I understand, has never worked in the private sector, know anything about how the economy works? She's been a government employee her entire career. And so I think her proposals are absolutely ludicrous, but they are poll-tested proposals designed to appeal to a constituency to get her votes. That's all it is. Most of the stuff that she's proposing would never get through Congress. And frankly, some of the stuff that Trump is proposing as well, I don't think would have a chance either. It's sad that we haven't had more of a real open debate and discussion. I remember back in the days, they would do three debates. You would have one debate just on the economy. You'd have one debate on foreign policy, and then you'd have a third debate on something else. We didn't have that. These debates now are absolutely pointless. And
one thing that's important, no matter how many debates there are, or how many commercials, I think that Bill would agree with me with what I'm about to say. I don't think people vote for people they don't like.
That's true.
I think they can vote for people who they may disagree with politically. I think some Ronald Reagan supporters maybe didn't agree with what he said. But I don't think if someone finds you to be unlikable, I don't think you get their vote.
Bruce, I have to respectfully disagree to one extent. I look at this like, you know, you go down the expressway and they're filled with lawyers for personal injury attorneys. Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody likes personal injury attorneys, but when you get in an accident, you want to have the best one. And I think that a lot of people view Trump that way. Trump poll numbers are higher than his favorabilities right now. Bigger difference between that and Kamala's.
Josh, Bill's got a final question.
I just wanted to mention the smartest thing I ever heard in politics was said by Bill Clinton in 2002. He said, strong and wrong beats weak and right. There's no question that Donald Trump is seen as the strong candidate.
We've got to say farewell. We've got another full hour coming up. Don't go away. We're going to talk about who wins the U.S. Senate back shortly. Beyond the Beltway, thank you very much for joining us. In this segment of our program, we're joined by Phil Wegman. He is the White House reporter at Real Clear Politics, and he's been with us a couple of times in the past. And Phil, nice to have you with us. We will continue with our guests, Josh Cantrow and Mike Miller as well, so they may chime in with some questions. But a lot obviously has been focused on the presidential race, but I want to take a look at the Senate race. The Senate races out there. There's obviously control of the U.S. Senate and control of the House is something that is very important. So what I've done, and with your assistance, I've come up with a list of Senate seats that are up, and I wanted to get your sense as to where they are and what's likely to happen in these races. And so let us begin. And our first race is in Arizona. Tell us a little bit about what's happening in Arizona.
So Arizona is one of these states where Donald Trump is leading by a bit, and he's favored to win that state. And yet one of the dynamics that you're going to be hearing a lot about on election night is ticket splitting. There's this phenomenon where voters are going to support the top of the ticket, and then they might leave some of these down ballot races blank. That's the worst case scenario for Carrie Lake, the Republican there. If she's going to win, in all likelihood, it's going to be on the coattails of Donald Trump. Because if you look in the Real Clear Politics average, she's down there by about 4.5 points. And yet he's leading in Arizona currently by two. And I think that this race is so interesting because this should be a prime pickup opportunity for Republicans. But in Carrie Lake, you have someone who did her best mini Trump impression. She's, you know, talked at length about the 2020 election. She has not conceded her gubernatorial campaign there. She's very hawkish on the border. And yet what we see time and time again is that for other Republicans not named Donald Trump, it doesn't work. So this is an opportunity, but it's not one that control of the Senate hinges on.
Right. And again, when she ran for governor, she was sort of the odds-on favorite, right? Wasn't her defeat sort of a surprise to a lot of the people? So they may feel that they've already given her a chance.
Yeah, I think you're picking up on something significant here, because I've got to tell you, a lot of the Republican operatives in Washington, D.C. Were incredibly impressed with Carrie Lake. I mean, she could have a combative interview with the best of them. And that is great if you want to excite the base. I can't tell you the number of times I had operatives and campaign staff send me videos of her facing down John Carl in 2020. The problem is that owning the libs on the internet doesn't necessarily translate to actual votes. And it didn't work out for her last time around. We'll see if she's able to, you know, turn the tide this time. But yeah, if she wins there, in all likelihood, it will have been because of a Trump surge in Arizona.
Okay, let's take a look at the next state. What do we got?
Yeah, Nevada is interesting. Yeah, I mean, with you know, with Sam Brown, here you have a Republican candidate who's challenging the incumbent, Jackie Rosen, and certainly he has a very heroic resume. This is someone who served the country and also gave his all and was tragically harmed. One of the things that has been holding him back, though, is that beyond that lived experience, a lot of Nevada Democrats will point to the fact that he used to be from Texas, that he ran there not so long ago, that he also ran for the Republican nomination, the Senate nomination that Adam Laxalt ended up winning and then losing in November. And their sense of Sam Brown is that he has a, you know, very heroic resume, but he's thin on policy, and their attack is that he's also a carpetbagger. As of right now, you know, he's trailing in the Real Clear Politics average. If he was to win, that would signal, you know, I think a sea change moment, because he's trailing by about 4.5 points, and Harris is leading in Nevada. So, you know, if Sam Brown was to win there, one would assume Trump had a good night.
Is there much left of the former majority leader support there? Harry Reid, does he have any clout at all?
Yeah, the machine that Democrats built is working well in Nevada for Jackie Rosen. She has all of the advantages of incumbency, what's left over from that machine, and the money advantage. And what she has done against Sam Brown is tack towards the middle, specifically on issues like abortion. She's running this race as a moderate, trying to keep her seat.
Okay. Next state, let's go there, which is that's in Montana. John Tester, longtime Democrat.
Longtime Democrat, and certainly a political survivor. This is the election cycle where Republicans feel they have their best chance of knocking him off. They have a veteran in Tim Sheehy. He is leading the incumbent there by more than 4 points in the Real Clear Politics average. And, you know, he has been arguing in his race against Tester that it's time that a deep red state like Montana have a representative in the Senate that matches their values. One thing I'm keeping a close eye on, though, is Senator John Tester has made his reelection a referendum on abortion rights. And, you know, somewhat paradoxically, that's something that is polled well in a deep red state like Montana. At the same time, there's also a ballot referendum there to change the state constitution. So, you know, it seems that, you know, Sheehy is a foot in at this point, but Tester's not running panicked. And if he's able to, you know, harness that energy over the abortion issue, like we saw so many Democrats do during the last midterms, that might be enough to save his seat in the Senate.
Yep. Okay, next set. Let's go next. We got Michigan.
Yeah, we this is one to watch.
She is retired. The incumbent is retired, and this is an open seat.
That's right. And so you have Representative Mike Rogers, who is the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, and then somewhat ironically, perhaps you have Democrat Representative Elisa Slotkin, who was a former CIA agent. Both of these candidates are very serious. They are very well seasoned when it comes to foreign policy. Currently, she has a bit of a advantage over him in the Real Clear Politics average. But both these candidates, they're serious, they're well-funded. And the reason why I'm going to be paying particularly close attention to Michigan is if Rogers is able to surpass her, that means that he has come up with a passable answer on immigration. And again, he's probably riding the coattails of Donald Trump. On the other hand, though, if we see Slotkin surge, then in all likelihood, Harris has had a good night there. But, you know, something to also watch here is Harris has a bit of a problem on her left flank. Arab Americans are not happy with this administration's Israel policy. And, you know, perhaps there will be a sizable number of voters who stay home rather than voting for Harris or for Slotkin.
Right. And you've got some Arab American and Muslim leaders in the state who have endorsed Donald Trump. When we come back, we'll talk about the other states that are up for election on Tuesday. And Phil Wegman of the White House and Real Clear Politics is joining us tonight. We'll hear more from Phil when we continue. I'm Bruce Dumont. Bruce Dumont back on Beyond the Beltway. We're talking to Phil Wegman. He is in Washington, D.C. tonight, and he keeps an eye on what's happening in the U.S. Senate battles. And we're also joined by Josh Cantrell and Mike Miller also, and we'll continue with them throughout the hour. But let's head to Wisconsin. It's going to be a tight race there for the presidential race, but there you have a veteran, Tammy Baldwin, a Democrat. Does she have much of a race there?
She does, and it was unexpected. Going into election season, Democrats, they knew that they couldn't take any of these races for granted. But Baldwin was maybe not considered a juggernaut, but one or two levels beneath that. In fact, you had the entire Republican congressional delegation decline to run against her. In fact, you know, the GOP golden boy, Representative Gallagher, who, you know, was seen as a upcoming leader, he retired from the House rather than mount a challenge. Instead, you've got Eric Hovde, a businessman in Wisconsin, and he has been pretty competitive there. The race is about 1.5 points, which favors Tammy Baldwin right now. But certainly it's a barn burner, and it comes down fundamentally to the number one issue, which is the economy.
Is Trump active in any way in that race?
Yeah, Trump has given his blessing. And, you know, each of these races that we've been talking about, not coincidentally, obviously, Bruce, these are a lot of the same battleground states, Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, right. Michigan. This is a situation that really does seem to favor Republicans because it's easier to run against someone to put the incumbents on defense. And, you know, if Trump is competitive in Wisconsin, and it's, you know, within the margin of error there, then perhaps Hovde can sneak by.
Let's go to Ohio, where Sherrod Brown, once upon a time, was considered a possible running mate. He appeared to be very popular, but in recent weeks, he seems to be in a tight race.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I think that is for the longest time, Sherrod Brown was seen as a Democrat who actually knew how to talk to working class voters. He wasn't just a blue dog. He was really a blue collar Democrat. He understood this intrinsically in a way that a lot of other Democrats did not. If Bernie Moreno is able to compete with them, and certainly this race is getting closer, then that would indicate that a built-in advantage is no longer there, that maybe Democrats have lost their edge when it comes to talking to the working class. We've seen that dynamic play out at the top of the ticket between Trump and Harris, and potentially some of the waves could be felt, you know, even as far downstream in Ohio with Bernie Moreno. This is, of course, you know, a red state, so it's an uphill battle for the incumbent there.
Let's go to Pennsylvania. Bob Casey, one of the legendary names, his father was governor and was also a senator as well, I believe. But he is being challenged, and this one, the challenger is Dave McCormick, who has basically been all over the airwaves.
He really has. One thing that Dave McCormick has gotten right that a lot of other Republicans were late to is that he defined Vice President Harris early on, immediately using her own words. And he sort of wrote the playbook for other Republicans coming out of the Democratic National Convention on how to define and how to attack Harris. A lot of the Republicans looked to him to take their cues. And in this race, we'll see if he can knock off Casey. This is one of the states that Republicans would really like to have as they build a potential Senate majority. But one of the things that I found notable here is that Casey, not only has he sort of shied away from Harris, he's been running ads in the final weeks of this campaign talking about how he stood up to Biden and Harris. That's never a good sign for the party in power in the White House when folks are campaigning on how they split with you.
Now, one of the surprise Senate races that appears to be tighter than most people thought at the beginning of the cycle is in Texas, where Ted Cruz is in the fight of his life.
And if you talk to Ted Cruz, he will always tell you that it is closer than the national media thinks. I remember back when he was challenged by Beto O'Rourke, he was really encouraging folks to pay closer attention, to take seriously the possibility that Texas could go blue. One of the things that's driving this is demographic change, and also a lot of folks who are moving out of other blue states to Texas for the economy there. Right now, Ted Cruz is up by about 4 points. If Colin Allen-Reed is able to keep this close, then that means Republicans have a lot bigger problems on their hands, because if a Democrat is pulling within 1 or 2 points of Cruz on election night, that means that there was a fundamental miscalculation somewhere along the line.
And also, if you if you've ever given to any Republican candidate or independent candidate, you probably get about 10 solicitations a day from Ted Cruz, all of which the sky is falling, the sky is falling. So he's going, he's taking it to the bitter end. Now, one of the races that's kind of interesting, it's more of a Republican independent race, and that is in Nebraska. Now, Nebraska has this unique situation where one of their electoral votes could go to either candidate because they have this one congressional district that's sort of independent of how electoral college votes are determined. But Deb Fischer, who is the Republican, she's the incumbent, and she is being challenged by Dan Osborne, and he's put up quite a race.
He really has, and there are some polls which show him within 2 or 3 points. There are others that show him around 10. This is not a race that Republicans thought that they were going to have to meaningfully compete for, but that's the thing about the experiment in democracy. Sometimes the results are unexpected, and all of a sudden you have Senator Fischer there with a contest on her hands. This is a headache for Mitch McConnell and others, because every dollar that they have to plow into Nebraska is a dollar that's not going to Ted Cruz, and maybe why he's sending all of those annoying solicitation emails, or it's a dollar that's not going into a race that Republicans really feel like they need to have, like Michigan, like Pennsylvania. But right now, Fischer is still the odds-on favorite, but any Republican who looked past Osborne did it to their own detriment.
Is there any other race that one that we don't have on this list, but I'd like to get your sense on it, and that is in Maryland, where the popular Republican governor, who really is Mr. Anti-Trump, he is running for the U.S. Senate. Where is that race at the moment?
Right. So we were talking earlier about the possibility of split tickets, where you had some voters in, Arizona turn out for Donald Trump, but, turn their noses up at Kerry Lake. That's the worst case scenario for Republicans generally. In Maryland, that's exactly what Larry Hogan is hoping for. He can't win this race with Republicans and independents. In fact, what he's going to need is a split ticket where some Democrats are saying, I want to support Harris, but I'm not going to support the Democratic candidate for Senate there. Right now, that's a tall order, but Larry Hogan, he's run as a moderate before. He's been successful with that approach, and we'll see if he wins there. If he doesn't, you're going to have a lot of Republicans who are particularly angry at Mitch McConnell for plowing about $30 million into that race, which was always uphill for Republicans, rather than investing in some of these pickup opportunities elsewhere.
But if he wins and Trump wins, he will replace Mitt Romney as the burr in the saddle for a president-elect Trump. He's not going to make his life easier.
And that position is opening. Certainly more and more, after Donald Trump remade the Republican Party in his own image, you have members of Congress who are pretty sheepish about challenging the former president, especially, as he seems to be on the precipice of the greatest comeback in a long time.
Bill, one last question. The battle between the Republicans and the Democrats for control of the Senate, where does it stand right now? You've looked at all these races. There may be one or two that we've overlooked, but where do you think the battle comes down on election night?
Because this is an environment where incumbents are on the back foot because of the economy, because of an especially unpopular president in Biden, it favors Republicans. And we were just chatting about this during the break. Republicans start with a bit of an advantage because West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin is retiring, and the expectation is that Jim Justice, the Republican there, is going to easily win that seat. But right now, Republicans are favored to win the Senate. The House is a bit of a question mark, as is the White House. It is going to be the definition of a dead heat and a barn burner. So buckle up. It's going to be a wild one.
Bill Wegman, thank you very much. Real Clear Politics, a reporter for the White House. And again, if it's your news from Real Clear Politics, that's where you should turn, because they've got all the news, the latest results. In fact, they'll have new results even on Monday as we head towards the final election decisions made by Americans on Tuesday that have not already voted. And again, we continue with Mike Miller and Josh Cantrow. I didn't give them too much chance to talk because, again, Phil was on a tight schedule tonight. But we will hear from them as we roll on. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us on Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289. If there's any other Senate race that you'd like us to address, give us a call. 1-800-723-8289. This is Campaign 2024. It's the last chance to ask questions. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly from Chicago. Back on Beyond the Beltway. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. And a question to you, actually to both of you. Do you expect any violence or reaction that's unpleasant?
I think it depends on how close the outcome is. But I am very fearful about violence from the left. If Donald Trump wins, they have been conditioned to view him as Hitler and all kind of bad things. You know, we could see the summer of George, the summer of love, so to speak, in 2020 on steroids. So I do have quite a bit of concern. And Democrats also have a history of not accepting presidential elections. Hillary claimed that it was the Russians that did her in, and that Trump, you know, colluded with Russians, and that's why she lost. And so I do have concern. I have concern on the right as well.
Mike Miller, are you worried?
I have much less concern on the right than I do on the left, and for all the reasons that Josh talked about. But to tell you what is even beyond that is that you have people like Jamie Raskin making the blatant statement that he will do everything in his power to not allow Mr. Trump, were he to win, to take office. He will use what he thinks the 14th Amendment could be adjusted to make sure he doesn't. How is this not, you know, everything that the Democrats say that Mr. Trump is, they are talking about that they're going to do it to the point of trying to keep him from having a transfer of power that is peaceful. Could you imagine the outcome that would happen if Jamie Raskin and others decided or was able to somehow get it agreed that Mr. Trump won the election, yet he cannot be president? It would be disastrous. But in terms of if Trump wins, I think that I think if there's going to be any trouble, if Trump loses, I think, like many of the people I know who are Republicans, will be sad and angry, but we would never do anything stupid. I think the Democrats do things that are stupid.
Is there anything that either candidate or both candidates could say in advance of election that would reduce the tension in the body politic, that would make it less likely that that would happen?
I think there are things they can say after the fact, to reduce that, to accept the outcome and, urge, nonviolence. I think that would be important for the losing party to do. But of course, they have to feel that the election was fair. And, we'll have to see what happens. We have to see how close it is. If it's not close, it becomes a lot easier. If it's razor thin, if it goes down to like what happened in Florida 24 years ago, can you imagine what that would be like in this country? I have real serious concerns about particularly with the left accepting a narrow loss, which is what I predicted they're going to experience, a narrow loss where Trump, where Harris wins the popular vote and Trump ekes out an electoral college victory. So yes, I have concerns.
Mike Miller?
Yeah, Josh, I have two hopes, in terms of whoever wins. I'm hoping that person wins by a lot, over 300 electoral votes, so that it's really not a question, that we have to worry about. It will have been decided pretty conclusively. But you know, what Harris has done, of course, and what the Democrats have done is painted all Republicans to garbage. I know that that's some debatable thing, but they haven't. They really do, I believe, they absolutely do despise people like me. And they have called Mr. Trump, in spite of the fact that he was a president for 4 years and never showed any fascist tendencies, they have called him Hitler. They have called him a fascist. How do you then say, oh, well, he won, and I think he definitely should be able to become president without any violence? I just don't see it. I don't understand how the Democrats could do that. Why would they do that? Because they do believe in their hearts that the Republicans are an evil group of people. How do I know that? Because they tell me that. They tell me that all the time.
Right. And Mike, they've believed that for a long time, and they've said it for a long time. They said it about George Bush. They said it about John McCain and Mitt Romney. But of course, when McCain and Romney both challenged Trump when they were, senators and were a bane in his side, of course, they were heroes. But they were only heroes when they were no longer a threat to Democrats anymore. So the Democrats laid this ground to call Republicans fascists and extremists and all of that, and to take the small band of criminals that descended the Capitol on January 6th and to try to say that it was, they represent the majority of the Republican Party. And people like you and me who are out in public supporting Trump, even though in my case, it's been quite reluctantly and it hasn't been wholeheartedly at times, they don't distinguish between us and the hardcore MAGA base at all.
No.
How do you feel, Josh, about the president's vow, President Trump's vow, to pardon many of the January 6th rioters? Is that just going to open up Pandora's box again?
Well, I think it was not a smart thing to say. Politically, I don't think it helps win him much support from the people he needs to win support from to get elected, the moderate middle. And I don't think it's right legally. I think that what happened, I've been on record as with my views on many shows about what happened on January 6th as being disgusting, despicable, and in many cases, criminal conduct. But I do think that there is a point, maybe not so much with pardon, but with clemency. If you look at the sentences that some of these people got versus the looters and rioters and the people that made the summer of 2020 so miserable in many American cities, including the city that I live, the cities that both Mike and I live in, Chicago, and Mike's near Seattle. I think that's got to be looked at. There was never any fair and impartial justice meted out against the vast majority of the rioters and looters in the summer of 2020. It just wasn't, and it's really quite sad.
But do you want President Trump to use the Justice Department to go after his enemies, including many of those who've been involved in this legal challenges against him? I mean, they've made his life miserable. Should they be getting off scot-free?
Well, I don't want to see Trump go after them. I want to see Trump on day one focus on getting our economy back on track, getting our border secure, and reestablishing U.S. deterrence power with regard to our foreign policy. That's what I want him focused on. But if there are people who committed criminal acts in their drive against Trump and Trump supporters, then that should be looked at. But that should not be the focus of Mr. Trump. There's too many things to do to get this country back on track.
If Donald Trump wins, three of the people that are going to be in the spotlight are going to be Robert Kennedy Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, and also Elon Musk. Mike Miller, do you like that that threesome? And would you like them as part of the brain trust of the new president?
I do not know as much about Kennedy as many people talk about. They really do like him and say he's very bright. He just has some kind of weird views on things like vaccinations or whatever. I'm a very big fan of Tulsi Gabbard, even though I know she holds some economic policy ideas that I don't hold to. And I think Elon Musk is – what he wants to do is bring some kind of efficiency to government. I think that's a wonderful idea. So I think he's – one thing that was a problem in Mr. Trump's first administration was he was not a very good person at picking – people to serve in the administration.
Right.
He may do a very fine job in his firm because, you know, you can hire and fire so easily and people come with credentials. But I don't think he understood the political lay of the land at all. And he ended up with some really bad choices and they came back to bite him. I hope that he will not do that again. And I think having people like Gabbard and Musk even make a really big positive difference in this situation.
Josh, how do you feel about that threesome?
I could be quite excited about Musk coming in and doing a sweeping review of government and making it more efficient. I think Gabbard probably has a place, although some of her views are, you know, don't comport with mine. Kennedy is, you know, really out there on vaccines and some of his public health pronouncements. I really would not like to see Kennedy part of the administration, but it could be that Trump owes him and that there is some hopefully minor role that he could fulfill. But in terms of putting him in charge of public health, I don't think so.
Well, I think that's one of the things that Kamala Harris and the Democrats, as part of their scare tactics up until voting day, is to talk about that with Robert Kennedy. He's gonna scare everybody, put people in charge of public health, and put women. Back shortly with one more segment on Beyond the Beltway. Don't go away. Dumont back for our final segment of Beyond the Beltway of Campaign 2024. Again, for those who have been listening to the entire show, you heard what we said about an hour ago when we made our predictions. But for those that just tuned in, we're going to quickly go through it again. Mike Miller, give us who you predict will be, not who you want, but who you predict will be victorious come Tuesday.
I get a gut feeling that the polls are not truly reflecting the thought processes of the electorate. I think that Mr. Trump is going to win, and I think he's going to end up with more than 300 electoral votes. And I can only hope that Kamala Harris does not win as many as, with all the problems you have in a flawed man like Trump becoming president, she actually, in a sense, scares me because of her position on getting rid of the filibuster, packing the Supreme Court, and her economic policies make Mr. Trump's policy issues minor in comparison. She has just what I think are lunatic ideas about the economy.
Josh Cantrell, who's your pick?
I like Mr. Trump's poll positions right now, where he's leading in the Real Clear Politics national average barely, and he's barely behind in the 538 New York Times and in Nate Silver's averages. Compared to where he was in 2016 and 2020. And if those polls are truly accurate, then Trump is headed to victory. That's the simple fact of the matter. If the polls have been weighted too heavily in favor of Republicans, then that could be a different story. But I think that Trump, while I don't think he gets to 300 electoral votes, I believe that he wins 271 electoral votes by winning Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada out of the seven swing states, and wins a narrow victory.
I would just pick one thing. I don't think he wins Georgia. I would be surprised if Trump won Georgia. And again, for those that have just tuned in an hour ago, I said on this program after a long preamble that I thought that Kamala Harris would end up as the president-elect come next Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. And I hope that there's the other thing that I hope is that we have enough poll watchers and enough alert people in the media that will very quickly identify any challenges on the vote and will handle it in an objective way so that all sides can sleep comfortably knowing that the vote was legitimate or not. Now, Donald Trump has declined to say that he will automatically accept the results because he doesn't know if there's going to be skullduggery and voter fraud. We don't really know that. I don't know whether anybody really should just categorically accept that without that caveat, but that's the way I would feel. But I think that it is a responsibility of the news media and others, to both Republicans and Democrats, to speak very frankly about the quality and the accuracy and the efficacy of the presidential election. And I hope that if there's people out there that are stealing it, I hope you remember that you're doing something very dastardly that a lot of people gave their lives to protect. And if you're trying to rig the election in any way, shame on you and shame on your destruction of the American Republic for which it stands. Final word to you, Mike Miller, on the ability for the people to get together and after a while lick their chops and get ready for the next battle. Is that going to take months or years?
Yeah, I think months. I think people's memories of politics. I actually took a course in the economics of politics, and it had to do with how long is a memory, and with the marketing memory is less than 6 months. So in 6 months, whoever the president will be, we'll just start fighting whatever. So if Kamala Harris wins, we'll just have to fight over the issue of whether she's going to try to pack the Supreme Court and things like that, which will fail if we take over the Senate. It will be fine. And certainly I will be fine because this is not what runs my life. I enjoy it like sport. So, yeah.
Well, it's also
Go
ahead, Josh.
No, I wanted to echo Mike's comments about, like, you know, I appear on this show and I do some other political stuff, but I mean, politics doesn't run my life and I don't wake up thinking whoever the president is, that's going to have any impact on my personal happiness. And I think that most Americans are like that, and we're going to maybe not come together as a country, but we'll move on, and things will go on, and we'll just battle it out in the political arena like things should be, not on the streets and not in violent actions. And that is my fervent hope and wish, and hopefully that happens.
Yeah, and Democrats can also think of it this way. If Trump wins, he's a lame duck. So he will be gone in 4 years. If Trump loses, he's not coming back. There will not be another election with Trump in it. So in one way or the other, Trump will become less important. No, he'd be 80-some years old. Not going to happen.
I just think that there's going to be next Sunday, we're going to be talking about a variety of new things in politics. And again, as I said, I reluctantly predict that Kamala Harris will win the election. And frankly, I hope I'm wrong, but we'll see. I made my prediction. Again, our thanks to Josh Canfro and also to Mike Miller, also to Fritz Goldman, the producer and the director of this show. They've been with us every Sunday night for the last 52 weeks, and we'll all be back to discuss a shift in the administration. The first several months, obviously, will be about who is getting particular spots on the, you know, on the deck, whether the deck is the Titanic or it's some luxury lighter. But again, there's going to be lots more politics to discuss, including the future of the Democratic Party and the future of the Republican Party, regardless of who wins come Tuesday night. But again, it's part of my life. I enjoy it every Sunday night. And I thank you. Don't forget to vote. I don't care who you vote for. I really don't. But I want you to vote. And I'm going to vote. And you can figure out who I'm going to vote for. And we'll be back next Sunday night. Good night from Chicago.